Let's go ahead and get started, and I'll find these files somewhere. We're going to go ahead and get started with the August investigation meeting. We got some new members, so if you have any questions as we go along or something seems kind of strange, just stop and ask. Usually Sam goes ahead and leads us through the agenda, and then as a matter of course he'll read it. He'll read the recommendations by the staff, and then as they finish the recommendation, as he finishes the recommendation, we'll decide if we want to discuss it more or have a motion to go ahead and approve the staff's recommendation. So, Sam, would you like to go ahead?
As a reminder for some of you and perhaps new information for others, what is coming before you are staff's recommendations based off of its investigation of the allegations. Process-wise, when those come in, they come to me, I look at them, and I have to make a determination that if everything they said was true, would that constitute a violation? And if I think there's sufficient evidence to proceed, then it comes for the committee for consideration. If I don't, then it gets kind of kicked back and they get to try again. When they come to you, you're going to review the information similarly the way that I do. It's just based off of what staff tells you. There's not an opportunity at this stage for the respondents to really weigh in and offer evidence to the contrary from what staff's alleging. In that regard, when you issue an order out of this committee, what you issue is a summary proceeding order, which under administrative law operates sort of kind of like a ticket. And so just like if you get a ticket, you have a chance to go to court and defend yourself. If you are a respondent, you receive a summary proceeding order, they have an opportunity to go to a hearing, at which point they can provide their defense and staff has the burden to prove that the allegations that they've brought forth are true. With that kind of in mind, when cases are brought to staff's attention, cases either come from outside or inside. Outside cases are in the form of either public complaints or public disclosures. Those cases always end up with an order in front of this committee to make a determination whether or not a violation occurred or not. Other cases may occur because staff opened its own investigation. If staff determines after it's investigated something on its own that no violation occurs or is likely to have occurred, they will close those and you guys will never know about those. If they find that they think an allegation is warranted to bring forth, then you'll see those come in. And so sometimes you'll hear me say this is a case brought by public complaint, because we're just noting even if the complaint is completely meritless, for us to be a open and transparent governing body requires that we take complaints, and when they're meritless, we say they're meritless. And if there's merit, we say there's merit. Additionally, I think you all were provided previously a copy of the graduated sanctions that are in our regulations. Those graduated sanctions are in play because the Kansas legislature requires us to have some. How we go about using them, we have a little bit more discretion. And so as you read staff's report and recommendations, they will try to look at the graduated sanctions and tell you why they think a certain penalty is merited based off of what they see there. You can see different things and you can come to different conclusions based off of how those sanctions are supposed to work. What you can't do is completely throw the sanctions out the window without changing the regs. Does that make sense? Okay. If you have other questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I want to make sure we all started with a fresh kind of footing. The first set of matters before you is the consent agenda. These are three matters related to applicants who made false statements in submitting their applications. I would say that these are fairly customary and standard for what we see in these kinds of cases. In each of them, staff recommends the board approve the applications for each of the three respondents, but also assess a $50 penalty for submitting a record or an application with false statement. Additionally, to the $50 penalty is a 1,095-day probationary period. If you're doing the math, that's 3 years. And that's fairly standard for what we've done in the past. Essentially, the probationary period says, don't mess up. If you do, you're at risk for losing your license. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I'd recommend approval of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Okay, we've got a motion to...
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any other thoughts or discussion on this? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nobody is opposed. So, okay, let's move on to the discussion cases here.
So the first discussion case is case number 2021-169-01 in the matter of Savannah Gatewood. This is a case in which the respondent was licensed as a registered nurse in another jurisdiction, had entered into a diversion agreement or a probationary agreement with that board of nursing for taking narcotics from her employer and diverting them for her own use. The respondent ended up having her nursing license revoked for failing to comply with the terms of the probationary agreement. Because of that revocation of her nursing license, board staff is recommending a revocation of her EMT license here in Kansas. Staff's recommendation is consistent with what the board has done previously.
So I have a quick question. New to this, the time-space continuum here is pestering me a bit. So I'm wondering, 2021, by and large, all of the files are from 2021, and then we finally get the other states' order in 2024. And then I looked at my watch, and how does that happen? Because it seems like something like this should move faster.
It's a fair question, and staff is certainly able to answer that if you want. It's my understanding that there has been some changes in staff's investigations department, and there was a fair amount of reorganization and new employees, and there was a backlog full of cases. Primarily, we are required to do application cases within a fixed deadline. None of the others are like that. And so we try to do application cases first and foremost, and then cases that ordinarily involve patient care, kind of more immediate needs, will bubble up, and then triage-wise, they kind of just fall down the rank. And so we are seeing some older cases as they try to clear that backlog. It's my understanding that this has happened previously, like maybe 10, 12 years ago. There was a substantial backlog, and staff essentially caught it up over a period of 2 years, and that's what they're moving towards now.
Has she been practicing?
From everything that we can see, perhaps in the states of Oklahoma and Missouri.
Okay. Is there any way to, like, cases that ultimately might be a potential revocation that get that case processed sooner?
Yes. As we work through that backlog, that would, if there is a potential revocation on this, she had entered into an agreement that, had we heard it at the time, we would have agreed to do the same thing, which is kind of what we did. So this was a joint venture between the Missouri State Board of Nursing and us, because she is holding an EMT license in the same area, and where it's physically located was only a matter of 25 miles between the two jurisdictions. So we would have mirrored their order that said, comply with all of this as you're going through, and if you fail to comply, it turns into revocation, which is ultimately what Missouri did on their side of it, and then we're following on the back end.
Thank you.
And just for clarification, do we have an investigator for the Board of EMS besides you right now?
Yes, I've got two.
You've got two?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We need a motion regarding this.
I'd make a motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, no opposition. All right, moving on.
The next matter before you is the matter of Jack Owens in case number 2025-071-01. This is a case that you should have a proposed order for in your packet. In this case, respondent filed an application to have his EMT license granted. Respondent was asked the question whether or not there were criminal proceedings, either felony or misdemeanor, pending in any federal, state, or municipal court. Respondent answered no. However, at the time, respondent had been charged with one count of an aggravated assault, which was a level 7 felony, and a one count possession of marijuana, which is a class B misdemeanor. Those cases were still pending as the respondent had entered into a diversion agreement and had not successfully completed the terms of the diversion. Staff's recommendation is to find that a violation occurred, but to issue a $50 civil penalty and process the application. To be consistent with other cases that are similar to this, I've added also the condition of the 1,095 days probation, which we've done in other cases of this type previously. Otherwise, I would recommend approval of the application and the order as proposed. I will note that in cases that are like this, it is not uncommon for people to enter into a diversion agreement and not really understand the legal significance of what that means. And so then when they get to an application like ours, it asks them a question which they've answered no. Whether they truly thought it was a no or didn't think it was a no, it's always hard to tell. But if you have a diversion agreement, you still have charges pending until they're dismissed. And so to be consistent with what we've done previously, that's why this order does what it does.
Okay. All right.
Is he working? You know? Current applicant?
And he ought not to be because you haven't granted his application yet.
Mm. Okay. So moved then.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. No opposition. Moving on.
All right. The next case before you is 2025-081-01 in the matter of Matthew Givens, EMT, and 2025-081-02 in the matter of Morris County, EMS. This is a case which you do not have a proposed order for it yet, but in which the respondent, Mr. Givens, had applied for employment and then ultimately ended up being hired and was found to have tested positive for marijuana. The service failed to recognize that at the time, but then later noted it and then took action. So the two cases, the first is to find that the respondent Givens be placed on a 1,095-day probationary period with conditions, and that respondent Morris County be levied a civil fine in the amount of $250. The civil fine for Morris County comes from its failure to report in a timely fashion about Mr. Givens's drug issue, and also it failed to ensure that there was proper documentation for a patient that was cared for by Mr. Givens. There just wasn't a patient care report created for that run, which is probably the more significant of the two issues, to be honest. So if you have any questions, staff is present to answer those. Otherwise, I'd recommend approval of the order.
This is the hospital where I used to work, and I'm not their EMS medical director there. But I was walking down the hall to get some lab drawn, and the HR person came out and said, "Hey, we have an issue with EMS. We didn't report a positive drug screen." And I said, "Well, you got to report it." So anyway, but yeah, they screwed up. So need a motion for a motion to approve or.
They're hospital-based?
Yeah.
You know, that'd be my only question. Is it really an HR problem or a EMS director problem?
Well,
I think there's a stretch there, of course, but in dealing with the HR people in the hospitals, sometimes the flow of communication isn't very good.
Well,
they might have known about it sometime before the EMS guy ever knew.
No, the way I understand it is their EMS director looked at the report, misread it as negative, and he said it was fine. Yeah, go ahead and hire him.
Okay, so it started there.
Yeah, did start there.
I'm on here as a director.
So you on there, Dave? Did I say that correctly?
They did not say that correctly.
Oh, okay.
What happened is that our typical policy with the hospital is they go through their HR process, they process the drug testing, and then they let me know when the applicant or the person that has been hired is ready to go to EMS. She misread the drug test, and then about a week and a half, 2 weeks after that, she called me and told me that happened. We put Givens on a 24-hour administrative leave immediately, and then turned around and did a rapid test, and it showed negative, and we terminated it. I think where the communication was, since we terminated him, and our misunderstanding was, we should have probably notified the Board of EMS that mistake happened. But we followed hospital policy for the hospital, so kind of it was HR's mistake. But and we did get caught and was processed through the hospital policy, but I don't think we didn't forward on that information to the Board of EMS.
What kind of time lapse was there between HR's failure to find it and you having another test done?
It was 2 weeks, about 2.5-3 weeks, and he was down for a week because he had not got his certification number because he was brand new, had just recently passed his state test, and we were waiting on his number to come through. So there was a little bit of period where he wasn't even working with the service. And then he had two shifts that he actually worked for us. And then it was caught by HR when they were scrubbing the paperwork. And that's when she called. That's when we immediately put him on administrative leave and then had him come back and then test.
And then if I understand correctly, when you got that test, you terminated him, but you did not notify the Board of EMS?
That is correct.
Sam, did you say there was a documentation issue with this individual, or was that a...
Yeah, that was the same individual. There was one of the runs that this individual went on, there wasn't apparently a patient care report created. And so that's where the additional fine comes for Morris County.
Yeah, sorry, Dave, I misread the line in Terry's report here.
Dave, can you expand on that?
I'm sorry, which, sir?
He said there was a patient that was cared for, but no report was generated. Is that what...
It's my understanding from staff's R&R.
The only patient that he would have done a report on would have been a return trip from the hospital to the nursing home. And then I think he actually took the vital signs from the hospital, and then he just was in the back with the patient with a trip back to the nursing home.
And no report was generated from that?
No, there was a report done. There was a patient care report done.
Joe?
The patient care report that was not completed was completed in July for an incident that occurred in March. The patient care report that was the one that is cited for this was actually submitted by the assistant service director and filled out, completed by the assistant service director.
Did you hear that, Dave?
I did, sir.
Well, from what we have now, we have failure to report and the fact that the person involved did not complete a run report in a timely manner, I guess you'd say. At this point, we will have to say that that an issue occurred, and now we just need to decide: does the sanctions remain the same as what staff recommended, or should we have a change?
I think perhaps we want to separate 2025-081-01 against the attendant or provider, and I would make a motion to accept recommendations in 8101.
I'll second that.
Okay. All right, it's been moved. Do we need to do just redo the, have you create the order as such and approve it at a later date?
So I think what would be best is if we finish the vote on 01.
Okay.
And then decide what you want to do on 02.
Okay. On for the vote on 01, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, and then on 02, thoughts?
What local action has been taken to ensure something like this doesn't happen again?
So what's going on, what improvement we did, and I think I put it in a statement that I forwarded to the Board of EMS, was that I physically will see a copy of the drug screen, whether it's HR shows me physically, or they actually email me a copy of the drug screen. That way I know that I physically have seen that employee had passed their drug screen, so we don't have this happen again.
Thank you. On 2025-8102, I would make a motion for a level one sanction and accept local action.
Can you remind me what a level one sanction is, since I don't have my list of sanctions?
Yeah, it's essentially just accept local action and dismiss with nothing else.
They haven't had any previous problems, or
none come to mind.
I don't. I've never seen any since. So anyway, it's been moved that we drop the fine against Morris County Hospital and accept local action.
Is there a way to, and I guess, Sam, I'm asking you, is there a way to deal with that without leveling the fine?
Yeah.
And what is that?
It's essentially we accept local action and close the case.
Okay.
And we do that.
Okay. And yeah. Have we done some of that in the past?
Absolutely.
Did you make the motion? I'll second the motion.
Yeah. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. All right. Moving on.
All right. The next matter is case number 2026-035-01 in the matter of Kelly Groen, applicant. This is a case coming for the board's consideration in which the applicant truthfully disclosed prior criminal convictions coming out of Ellis County for charges that took place in 2022 and 2023. Both of those cases got combined, and respondent pled guilty to one count of possession of methamphetamines, which is a level 5 non-person felony. A respondent was sentenced to 18 months of supervised probation and up to 18 months of drug treatment, and was released from supervision after completing all terms of the sentence. Back in October of 2025. Respondent's criminal record check indicates no subsequent criminal history. Staff recommends that the application be granted because respondent has presented sufficient evidence to conclude that she's been sufficiently rehabilitated to warrant the public's trust. I would recommend approval of the order that's proposed and before you that keeps with staff's recommendation.
I'll make the motion to accept.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, on we go.
The next case before you is case 2026-040-01 in the matter of George Davis, applicant. This is another application case in which in this case, the applicant was asked, have you ever been convicted or found guilty of a felony crime? A respondent answered no, but then as part of the application, you fill out the application, and then you also have to fill out a different application for when you submit your fingerprints for your background check. And in this case, the applicant on the waiver agreement for his fingerprint background check, he did disclose to having been convicted of crimes back in 1976 and 2013. The 1976 crimes occurred in North Carolina and involved 8 counts of breaking and entering and 7 counts of larceny, both of which are felonies in the state of North Carolina, and resulted in the respondent being sentenced to 4 years of incarceration and paying restitution of court costs. Respondent was also indicated that in 2013 he was charged with driving under the influence. But in looking through staff's R&R, it is not particularly clear whether or not he was actually ever convicted of that or not. Regardless, staff is recommending that the applicant's application be granted. However, because on that first application he indicated that he had not ever been convicted of a felony, that staff does recommend assessing a $50 civil penalty, and I added the 1,095 days probation, which is fairly customary, but otherwise direct staff to process the application. That order is before you in your packet.
I move to accept council's recommendation.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept the staff's recommendation. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, moving on.
The next case before you is in the matter of Daniel Davis, case number 2026-041-01. This is another application case. In this case, the respondent did disclose a prior conviction for a felony crime. Records indicate that in September of 2009, respondent pled guilty in Platte County, Missouri to one count of assault in the first degree, which is a felony in Missouri. A respondent was sentenced to 10 years of incarceration with the Missouri Department of Corrections beginning on November 12, 2009, and to pay restitution court costs. There is an order of discharge publicly available that indicates that respondent's supervision ended and that the respondent was notified of a $45 balance owed to the Department of Corrections. One of the things that staff has maintained over as long as I've been involved with the board is that if restitution or court costs still are outstanding, they'll ask that applicants make those correct before they process the application. On July 11, 2026, respondent completed payment of the $45 for the overdue balance, which is what kind of frees the application to move forward. Respondent's criminal record check reveals no subsequent criminal history, and so staff recommends that there's sufficient evidence to conclude that respondent has been sufficiently rehabilitated to warrant the public's trust and recommends approval of the application.
I see his crime was in 09. I think a lot of us have done silly things when we were young. It's been a long time ago, and if he's been clean and met his requirements, that your recommendation is staff's recommendation.
I second.
I'd make the motion.
Okay. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
The next case in front of you is in the matter of Jeffrey Sekovec.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty new.
Which is case number 2026-044-01. This is another application case in which the respondent did disclose as part of the application of a conviction for a felony crime. A respondent indicated that on August 27, 2021, as a juvenile, respondent pled guilty to a felony in Johnson County, Kansas. Records indicated that respondent completed all requirements imposed as part of his sentence on October 10, 2022. Staff is recommending that there's sufficient evidence to conclude that respondent has been rehabilitated sufficiently to warrant the public's trust and recommends approval of the application. I will note that often we see cases like this with very different sets of facts in which juveniles believe that their records are completely and totally closed and nobody will ever know about them, and so then they say they've never been convicted. And so the fact that this applicant was forthcoming, I think, adds to it the credibility of staff's recommendation that
they're not trying to hide anything.
Do you get the information on what they were convicted of since they were juvenile?
So it's in the report and recommendation that staff presented to you, but because it is a juvenile record, we tend to leave those out of orders.
Okay. I'd make the motion to approve it.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Just a comment. You know, do we have to look at all these, or could this fall under delegated authority?
So these could be delegated if they had been delegated. I don't know that they've been delegated yet. What has been delegated previously are violations related to continuing education audits of individuals, but not for violations of this type.
I'm talking about the ones we just went over, not the ones coming up.
So I think staff's position has been that if there is a felony and the question as to rehabilitation is coming through, it's best if you guys make the affirmative decision on those.
Okay.
Which is always kind of curious, because those are the cases in which they've done everything right for the most part. But every once in a while, you guys do see one in which staff recommends no. So.
And well, the example of the one with the service, sometimes there's extenuating circumstances that, you know, you question that they did wrong, but is it worth what that was decided or recommended?
Right. Well, I was specifically talking about all the felony conviction things. You know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 of those. But anyway.
All right.
And then we'll move on to 3.8.
So 3.8, if it's all right, I can call them by numbers if you would like me to, or we can just agree that this is what we're talking about is on the agenda is 3.8. These are all IRV cases, which means that they are cases involving a failure of a sponsoring organization to provide notification to the board within 30 days of the last day of class, which constitutes a violation of KAR 109-17-4. All of these cases are considered first-time offenses, and so staff's recommendation for all of them is to accept local action. In each of those cases, the sponsoring organizations developed a plan that they said would ensure this would never happen again, and acknowledged that there weren't any other ongoing violations at the time. And so staff essentially would ask that the board issue orders noting that the violations occurred, but to take no other action against these sponsoring organizations. There are orders for all of these in your packet, and I would recommend approval of them.
So I want to jump in here. This is where I really start to get concerned with the agenda. This is a relatively new regulation coming in December 31st, 2024. Prior to that, it had been a quarterly reporting system. In that, if I remember back through everything, the justification was really a modernization. We have new software. Services can report, you know, via spreadsheets, and it'll be easy. My concern on the regulation at the heart of this is there was no danger to the citizens of Kansas to the quarterly reporting system that existed from at least 87 to 2024. And the notion of a 30-day rolling window increases complexity exponentially, i.e. if you are a service doing 100 CE offerings, now you have 100 rolling reporting dates as opposed to 4 fixed dates. So I'm really think we need to, at tomorrow, have a conversation about the underlying regulation in this. Again, I think it only results in more technical violations. This is reporting of CE. It is not the quality of CE. It is reporting CE inside of a rolling window, which makes these deadlines problematic at best, and services likely to miss those windows. Since that 2024 implementation, there are 85 services, including this packet and another five in the pipeline somewhere. I looked back at the economic impact statement, and I think there is absolutely economic impact to a service attempting to track rolling windows of reporting, as well as then the subsequent investigations and fines. So with that, I guess I would make a motion or 3.8 level one, accept local action.
How do we? Well, is there any proof that local action occurred?
Yes, for there every is. Single one of those.
Every one of those, okay.
A second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept local action on all of 3.8. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Just for my information, Joe, why did we change it?
We changed it because providers were not getting the training reported upon them. So me as a paramedic was not receiving my documentation within a timely manner when we were at the quarterly side of it. So when we go to renewals, and this went in conjunction with the fact of the board directing us to pre-audit folks going into renewal, that there needed to be a very short window for those that education to get reported in. Otherwise, it was on me as the paramedic to submit. We fixed the system so that it would issue a certificate, so that the services would not have to issue a certificate as long as the training report was submitted, to help with the timeliness of getting that through. And I think you noted the 85 cases. I would also state that there's close to 5,000 training reports that came in on time. So.
But there was the option of the certificate, and the certificate was in place. If I remember, they had 30 days to provide them a certificate, or they could take a copy of the roster.
I don't know about a copy of the roster. There was a requirement in regulation that prior to that date that the programs had to provide a certificate within 30 days of a person saying I needed a certificate for it.
Yeah, my concern is
which that no longer exists. So
created something that results in this level of technical violations, and as near as I can tell, it looks like they will continue to go on, and there's absolutely an administrative burden with programs tracking those moving dates.
I would say the frequency is declining significantly since the investigations committee has started addressing these. What you have before you is dated back to October.
Well, when I look at this list, I'm not sure exactly what to make of it. When you tell me that 5,000 reports have been in time, that's encouraging to me. To me, this almost looks like somebody's trying to create a protest against the Board of EMS is what it looks like to me. it's kind of a brash thing to say, but I don't know. It sounds like we might need to see if there's any way to streamline that reporting process or do something. I looked at the regulation regarding that, about all the stuff you have to report, and it did seem pretty involved. And you know, I would say perhaps over the next, you know, perhaps over the next, you know, couple months, maybe if Dr. Foat and Joe and whoever would like to maybe sit down and see if there's a compromise or a way to change it and possibly update the regulation. I think that's reasonable. But that's kind of what I was thinking when I looked through all these, is that, you know, some people are you know, looking at the case 3.12 and they're not even cooperating. That's, you know, to me, that's something we need to fix. So, but anyway, I don't know if anybody else has any comments.
I agree with that, and the fact that depending on the size, and it's interesting that a lot of these places are a little larger and probably have dedicated training people, whereas some of them don't. And if you're, you know, if you're, I'll use Marysville, for example, if you're a single guy and you got to do it all, I'm not sure the getting paperwork in 30 days, if you try to do some educational stuff, is at the top of the priority list. I'm not saying that makes it right, but with that many, there's got to be something maybe a little more user-friendly, and it's not my skill set to figure that part out, I guess. So,
yeah. It's the rolling that I think introduces the opportunity for failure points. There are people that take vacation for a couple of weeks, but these dates just continue to, you have these rolling windows. And again, I would.
Let me ask you this, Joe. When they're not completed in the 30 days, have they been completed at all? Or are they just really, really late?
No, that's what triggers is the submission is after 30 days.
Right.
So there are some that are 31, 32. There are others that are 400. In this range for this group, there was, I think the highest was 382 days. The lowest was 31.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big differential.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like one problem is we won't know if, we don't even know if an offense has occurred if they don't file the report at all.
Correct. So. And we have had services state that they would choose to not issue CE for the offering rather than report after 30 days, which yeah. also seems
which
counterintuitive. Well, that's counterproductive to what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, a bigger problem for Kansas EMS. So I think we absolutely need reasonable reporting guidelines. The state has an interest in getting that reported, but I still struggle with no demonstrated, you know, harm to the citizens on a quarterly report that then turned into a rolling 30-day window.
This probably doesn't have anything to do with harm to the citizens. It has more to do with the efficiency of the Board of EMS. You know, we have a small amount of people doing a heck of a lot of work, and so we have to figure out a way to do it and get everybody certified and so forth. So, but
I don't think Kansas law should be driven by agency convenience.
I think it should.
I'll argue this is not agency convenience in any way, shape, or form. This is convenience for our providers, the people that we license. This is so they have the documents within a 30-day timeframe. This is not our convenience.
So if we have a reg that says they will have their certificate in their hands within 30 days, that gets them the certificate, correct?
That if we had that reg, yes, that reg went away. That would solve that component of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I would propose that maybe Dr. Foten and Joe get together sometime and maybe just discuss and see if there's any streamlining we can do to the process. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. And then if we come up with some sort of way to do that, then bring that to the October meeting, and we'll see what we can work out, because obviously we've got issues, disagreements here that we need to sort out, I certainly don't think we can do it in investigations very well. So Sam, shall we go ahead and go to 3.9 and
sure.
Try to figure out what to do?
So these are cases in which there have been prior violations, and because there have been prior violations against these entities, staff recommends a civil fine of $50 for each offense. In light of the most recent conversation, you could easily do to these what you just did and say that you're going to accept local action and move forward. I will note that these entities have all offered local action previously and all had been granted essentially a one-time freebie. And when they offered local action, they said, we have a plan, this will never happen again, and yet it has happened again. So I'm not exactly certain what their new local action fixes, but they have a new plan. So if you want to give them another shot, you certainly can.
I would make that motion, level one sanction and local action.
Okay.
You'd have the timeline when we give them the opportunity, and then they...
So these violations were all within the last 12 months, in which they had an issue, they were noted about the issue, the board took up the case, and then they did it again.
Well, I think I have a biased opinion against the University of Kansas because I dealt with that. And I had to call three supervisors, and it took 6 months before them to post the stuff on your website, on the portal. I had to enter it myself, and then after 6 months, they probably got around to doing it, and it double entered. So then I had to correct it, and that was on me. So, you know, if they're a huge place, I mean, if they want to be in the business of educating EMS people, I think they need to do things correctly, and I'm not sure $2,500 fine is going to impress anybody, but at the University of Kansas, but...
And that's in 312.
Yeah, we're talking pretty much just on 3.9 right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the problems we run into being, you know, I have been on the board, what do we figure out? This is my 19th year, I think. But sometimes you have to slap people on the hand to make them
get their attention
and pay attention. And I, you know, we've really tried over the years to you know, encourage people, hope they read their emails and stuff like that. But, you know, when I look at all these services, I look and say, either the regulation needs to be fixed, or people need to start paying attention and doing what they're supposed to do. Because the board, you know, the board looked at this back 7 years ago, or how many, was it 24, did you say, that this board? Yeah. The board looked at this, you know, 2 years ago and said, yeah, this is what we need to do to serve our providers, and they're just not following the rules, so.
Yeah.
But, sometimes we need to make adjustments, so, you know, sometimes I wonder if maybe we need to send out recordings to have people listen to the instructions instead of have them read them, because sometimes they just don't read the whole thing. So, sorry, I'm getting old and grumpy.
Was there a motion made?
There has
yeah.
been, with an amendment to accept local action and assess no fines.
There hasn't been a second.
And that, there was a second? Or was
there was
no second.
And that's on 3.8?
That's on 3.9.
3.9.
Second it with local action for the point you just made.
Yeah. Well, it looks like the motion dies for lack of a second. So does anybody have another motion or a different idea?
Is what we have in front of us the recommendation of the staff, and
which is a $50 fine.
I'd make that motion.
And move and second it. I'm going to get something to do.
Okay.
Do we have a motion or a second for that?
One second.
Moved and second that we accept the recommendations of the staff. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Nay.
All opposed. Aye. Okay. So passes 3-1. Okay, Sam, go ahead.
Give me 1 second. The minutes got more complicated when we have a nay vote. All right. The next matter is case IRV 2025-085-01. This is another case similar to the others against in the matter of Tex Inc. There is a single offense noted for this one. However, staff is recommending a $50 fine for this because this would constitute a third violation. There is not a proposed order. I haven't gotten one yet.
When you say single offense but third violation, what does that
so
mean?
So when they do the audit, if you have three classes that constituted a violation, then they will say that's three offenses but a single violation. You don't get dinged for every one of those classes that are outstanding. If you do an audit today, and we find some, and then we do an audit in 3 months, and we find some. In 3 months, that'll be a new violation for however many classes they find.
Is that how 310 and 311 work?
Yeah. So there were some of those that had multiple, I think up to 8 classes that constituted offenses, but you didn't see a change in penalty based off of how many offenses there were. It's just based off of the number of violations.
And this one is a little bit more interesting because you have back-to-back cases, 2025-2026, so.
Right, and they all constitute off of separate audits.
Okay.
If you become a frequent flyer, so to speak, I think you can expect to be audited more frequently.
Okay. Anybody have any thoughts or? I'm done with my editorializing, so whatever you guys would like to proceed with.
I'd make a motion to approve the recommendation as presented.
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Sam, go ahead.
The next one is case IRV 2026-019-01 in the matter of Tex Inc. This is similar to the last one, but would constitute a fourth violation. In this case, staff recommends a penalty of $150 per offense, which would constitute $450.
Same thing applies. I make a motion to approve that.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No opposition. Okay, moving on.
The last case is case IRV 2026-004. It doesn't list as a -01, but it should. I think it's just a typo on the agenda. In the matter of the University of Kansas Health System, this is a similar case. In this one, staff is recommending levying a civil fine in the amount of $50 with an additional civil fine in the amount of $2,500 for failing to cooperate with the board's investigation in lieu of suspension of the sponsoring organization approval.
What does the failure to cooperate look like?
Generally, they don't respond to emails, don't respond to calls. You ask for records and they fail to provide them. It would be unusual for a sponsoring organization to refuse to respond, but I suppose it has happened.
It happened to me. I'm not going to make the motion given my personal...
Your personal thoughts about
it.
Okay.
Frustration with it.
You're taking yourself out of the loop. I'll go ahead and make the motion since... And that we accept...
Has that been a long standing problem?
It is a very consistent problem, yes.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept the board or the staff's recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. All right. Anything else? Okay. We have completed the agenda. Does anybody have any comments before we adjourn? Okay. Well, we'll see you all tomorrow morning then.